And we'd like to welcome you back to Spotlight on Long Island Schools on 103.9 LI News Radio, streaming live on the web at linewsradio.com. Don't forget to like our Facebook page, Spotlight on Long Island Schools, suggest a program, club, or activity, and somebody like Ziad could be right here in our Spotlight next from your school district. I'm Bob Vecchio. We're continuing our conversation with the high school senior and also the valedictorian for the Lindenhurst Bulldogs. And Ziad has been explaining to us the extra galactical astronomy project that he's been involved in. And we've been talking about Abel 1763, which is a galaxy cluster that has really been the focus of your study. So first off, these things normally come up with unique names, and there's a little story behind how certain stars or galaxies or galaxy clusters in this case has been named. So how did Abel 1763 get its name?
So Abel 1763 was named after a scientist. Go figure, his last name is Abel.
What are the odds of that, right?
That's right. So basically, Abel was looking at, he was in the 1950s looking at whole sections of the sky, and he was classifying galaxy clusters, naming it after his name. He was going down a catalog from Abel 1 to Abel 1763 and beyond.
So there's a lot of galaxy clusters out there, obviously, that Abel found, and I'm sure there's a lot more. And this one is traveling away from us at a pretty high rate of speed, as you explained in the earlier segment. So what defines a galaxy cluster? How does a galaxy cluster come to be? So explain that to me.
So a galaxy cluster comes to be when there isn't really like a set number of the amount of galaxies that are in a cluster, but usually we look at about 100 hundreds of galaxies together bound by gravity. So these galaxy clusters are connected to other galaxy clusters like a web. They're called filaments that connect galaxy clusters together. And these clusters, sometimes they collide to each other or they move further away.
So sometimes it could be quite violent collisions of these galaxies coming together, which can impact things that are going on inside the respective galaxies, right?
Yes.
So Abel 1763 piques your interest because it's unique, you were telling me off the air. So what about Abel 1763 makes it so unique?
So the way we astronomers usually classify galaxy clusters is by classifying them as a cool core cluster or a non-cool core cluster. A cool core cluster usually, all a cool core cluster means is that the dense gas towards the center of the galaxy cluster is much colder than what is usually expected. And a non-cool core cluster is
probably a little warmer.
Yes.
See, I'm catching on. He's educating me. I'm learning here. Good. Okay. So earlier we were talking about how you were able to study this particular galaxy cluster. You were talking about the X-ray wavelength, the radio wavelength, and the optical observation as well. How are each of those created within a galaxy cluster?
So most of the baryonic mass in the galaxy cluster is in the form of a diffuse plasma called the ICM, or intercluster medium. We astronomers usually just call it a gas rather than a plasma. But this plasma is actually emitting the X-ray portion of the spectrum, whereas towards the center of the galaxy cluster there is a supermassive black hole that is emitting the radio wavelength in that spectrum. And basically these radio wavelengths could be bent in certain lobes. Sometimes we classify them as wide angle tails depending on the shape of how they're bent. But also what I was mostly studying was the optical wavelength, which deals with mostly the three-dimensional shape of the galaxy cluster. So using celestial coordinates and their respective redshifts of each member galaxy in that galaxy cluster, I could run a few tests on a computer to simulate what Abel 1763 has.
So what has your research revealed that wasn't known before about Abel 1763? And your research is also going to be published, is that correct?
That's correct.
So how old are you?
I'm 18.
18, and you're already going to be published, so that's pretty impressive. So again, what has your research revealed that we didn't know before?
So what what we had before I started looking at the optical wavelength was we had, so this is sort of going back to the way we classify galaxy clusters, ABEL 1763's X-ray data and its radio data show models that it actually has a, that it actually supports a cool core cluster conclusion. But what is missing from ABEL 1763 is that although it shows characteristics of a cool core cluster, there is no cool core actually detected in ABEL 1763. So looking at the optical wavelength, however, we actually see that there is what is known as subclustering within the galaxy cluster. So this is basically when a good group of galaxies in that galaxy cluster has a velocity difference that is drastic enough to actually make it seem like it is not part of the galaxy cluster itself. And the result of this subcluster is actually from a violent collision with another galaxy cluster. So this this is also going back to what we were talking about with the whole galactic or cosmic web,
right,
is that this collision was actually violent enough to destroy the cool core cluster, or the cool core that was inside this cluster, and ultimately create a filament from where the collision occurred.
So what are some of the unique characteristics with ABEL 1763 as a result of this difference in this violent change? What are some of the things that you see in ABEL 1763 that you might not see elsewhere?
So it's actually very rare to get a case like ABEL 1763. I believe it's only, I think from reading a few of the astronomical literatures published, that it's only been detected twice, or like a system like ABEL 1763. So ABEL 1763 falls in sort of a unique category in the sense that it's not a cool core or a non-cool core cluster. We call it a remnant cool core cluster in the sense that it had a cool core at some point.
Right.
Yeah, so we sort of classify this as the transitional phase between a cool core and a non-cool core.
Ziad, I mean, just absolutely impressive to be sitting here speaking with you, because, I mean, most of what you're saying is going way over my head, but I'm getting bits and pieces. But it's really, really impressive. How long has your passion for science, was it an early age, a later age? When did you get involved with science?
So I was always the type of kid to have stars hanging in his room ever since I was at a young age. I've always been interested in astronomy, but as I got into high school, I wanted to sign up for the science research program and see like what other sciences are out there. I got a little bit interested in biological sciences. I still want to go on to medical school beyond, but
what discipline of medicine would you pursue if you do that?
Well, I hope to pursue a surgery. I want to be a neurosurgeon.
And I would make sure I would go to you, because your attention to detail is somebody exactly I want poking around in my brain if I need neurosurgery. So here's another question for you. I mean, obviously, really impressive that you're going to be published. What was some of the challenges with your research project that you didn't anticipate?
So one of the main challenges that I had to sort of overcome very early on in my research project with the professors at Farmingdale was that I had to learn computer programming pretty much almost entirely on my own. So I learned the computer language Python. I downloaded it on my computer, and I started playing with a little bit of the examples that the Python modules had on their website and on their basically their manual. So once I started getting more familiar with Python, I started running like simple astronomical little astronomical tests that were on like one or two galaxies. And after a few months or so, when I started getting proficient enough in Python, my professor actually offered me to work on the paper with his astrophysics crew, and so this is
so you had a whole crew behind you too. I mean, just amazing. So if you could say something to the professor that you first hooked up with that started you on this journey, what would you say to him if he's listening?
I would say that I obviously cannot thank him enough for getting me this far. So if I had not begun to learn Python today, I would not have had research opportunities at Cold Spring Harbor Laboratory or Brookhaven National Laboratory. It is really because of him that I am where I am today.
Miss Sanfratello, I got to tell you, really impressive. You have a lot to be proud of over in Lindenhurst.
Thank you. I do. Okay. My kids are wonderful, and Ziad is a wonderful example of how hard they work.
We've been speaking with the folks from Lindenhurst School District and their valedictorian, who's going to be published in the Astrophysical Journal for his research of Abel 1763. Ziad, all the best to you in the future. You've been listening to Spotlight on Long Island Schools on 103.9 LI News Radio. And again, catch us on the web at linewsradio.com. Don't forget to like our Facebook page, Spotlight on Long Island Schools. There'll be a link there to listen to past shows. And we listen for the future shows when Ziad is going to be, I don't know, discovering another galaxy. We'll talk to you soon. 103.9 LI News Radio. Come on, come on, come on, let me show you what it's all about.